Welcome to The Breakdown. I'm Chuck Pierce.
And I'm Portia Scott Griffith.
And on our panel today, we have Obama denier and author of the book, Well, I Never Met Him, Alan Jarvis, transracial fracking misunderstander, Sally Rosenberg, Wiccan priestess and director of the documentary I Hate the Troops, Imani Fokolo, Ken Simpson, a Kentucky dog groomer who used a religious liberty law to refuse service to a gay dog, and Rex, a gay dog. Welcome to the program. TBTL.
Hey, welcome back to Personal Space.
I'm your host, Philip Jacobs, and let me tell you, I care about my personal space. Now, why don't we step up here and everybody get stepped up, and let's get some stepped up personal space up in this place.
Don't bully me, all right? I can't take it. I was cyberbullied within an inch of my life last night.
Let's face it, some people have a way with words. Other people, not have a way, I guess.
Usually I don't think my brother's that much funny, but I gotta give him some credit for that one. That's a pretty good spoof.
www.this and www.that. Let's www.explain it.
Oh boy. Here we go, everybody. This is really happening. It's a Wednesday afternoon edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
You want to do a make-believe radio show in a room somewhere. I'm telling you, there's no money in that.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Hello.
Coming to you today from the offices of Walsh, Walsh & Dormat in the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. It's turning into a beautiful day. Blue sky overhead. A nice day out there at Green Lake, getting my jog on. I'm enjoying some water from Starbucks sans straw, because that's the kind of earth first environmentalist I now am. Psych, it's just that they don't give you a straw anymore. It's like a sippy cup for adults. And when they handed it to me, I thought that could be content on the show. And then I thought that is the lowest form of content. Don't bring it up on the program. And it took me about 80 seconds to get into that. So anyway, hot start here on episode 2766 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Lots to talk about, of course. Last night was the election. Carrie and I holed up in a hotel room. I mean, this is the level of, like, I don't know what you would call it. This was the focus. This was the attention I was paying to the midterm elections. I didn't want anyone talking to me. I didn't want to be at a party. I just wanted to be somewhere safe with the people I love, staring at Steve Kornacki poking districts on the map. And so that's what I did. And it was actually kind of a nice night.
A lot of energy, a lot of motion, a lot of fun, a lot of high-fiving, a lot of smiles.
A lot of taking back the House of Representatives. So anyway, we'll talk not the X's and O's politically, because we're not the right people to do that probably. But we'll talk a little bit. I learned some things last night about how to have an election watching party and how to not have an election watching party. So we'll get into that. Also, I made a joke on Twitter this morning, and people are misunderstanding it, and it is killing me to not clarify.
Jokes are really difficult, I must say.
But New Luke doesn't have to go in and try to, you know, control what everybody else is thinking all the time. Except for the fact that I'm going to talk about it at length on the show. So, okay, fine. New Luke has a different way of trying to control how everybody's feeling about him. So we got that. And emails and V-mails. We haven't done emails and V-mails in a while, so we'll try to get to that today, too. And we'll say hello to this guy, the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace, and their splendor. Here he is, once again, having the time of his life because he's back at it again with the white Vans. He might have tacos for dinner tonight. He's not quite sure about it. A couple of my favorite things about him.
He's got hair, he's got chutzpah, and broad-based knowledge.
He's got all of those things.
None of those things. I have literally none of those
things.
You've
got all of those things. Listen, I'm going to use this. When I hear a thing that you have, I'm going to hit this bell, this dinger, okay?
Okay.
Okay, ready?
He's got hair, he's got chutzpah, and broad-based knowledge.
Half ding.
Enjoying the new bell. Hey, you're going to hate this. I'm going to ask you on the air. Just back off that mic
okay,
a little bit.
I'm sorry.
You're used to using mics, which is very good, that you got to eat. And these you got to not eat. These you got to just, like, look at from across the room and think about eating. Like they're a... like they're a tasty cake.
Like a person you're trapped on a desert island with who turns into a cartoon ham at some
ham,
point.
Or I would have also accepted turkey leg.
Yeah, you know what? That's the difference between, I believe, what are you working with, a Sennheiser here?
We got an Audio-Technica.
Audio-Technica shotgun product, and I've got at my house a Shure SM-70, and that's... and that right there, that's your difference.
You got to treat them differently. Yeah,
sure. It's a little warmer for me, and it's monodirectional, but it's not as it's not as tightly focused as this Audio-Technica.
Yeah, no, I mean, there is, as Genevieve said the other day, as we were recording our weekly podcast that we've been doing for 3.5 years on the same microphones, she finally just said to me the other day, "Do you think this is why people don't use shotgun mics for podcasting?"
I get why you want to use them, though, because, and I'll say this.
There is a reason.
I'll share this gem of speculation from back here. How's this?
Yes.
See, this feels way too far from me.
Yeah.
Okay. It's probably because depending on the environment you're in, it can be really loud. There can be a lot of noise around, and a microphone like this. And yeah, that's what we're doing, folks.
Yeah,
here at the
I
top of
it
the
up.
Show,
this is on me.
This microphone is very, very focused in the sound that it picks up, and it also does not pick up a lot of other sounds. And so there is, I think that there's something to that.
Yes, the thing is, you just do have to get used to it. And I even fall prey to this a lot too. I will also pop my own peas, which is crazy because I've been using these for forever. But yeah, it cuts down on the echo. If you and I were in here using this other kind of microphone, which I'm pointing at here, at RE50 or whatever that is.
That is, I believe, actually a Sennheiser.
No, that's an Electro Voice.
But
anyway.
It's not an RE50 because an RE50 is like the...
Oh, it's an RE20.
Yeah, guys, come on. Let's not bring this up with Andrew because it's going to be embarrassing for him later.
It's an RE20. It says it right there. Anyway, if we had to use a couple of those in the same room with them both open, it would be much more echoey in here. It would sound like we're kind of in a garage. So
Makes sense.
We trade off, but you do have to kind of get used to the mic thing. And I don't even know if I'm used to it yet.
It makes sense.
But.
I will tell you this. As a person who now for my job stuff... I mean, I spend almost all my time talking into some form of microphone, mm-hmm. often in front of a crowd of people. And now, I don't know, 15 years into that, the main thing that I've learned and the main thing that separates me from some other people who might try to do it, the wannabes, as it were,
mm-hmm.
the haters.
The losers.
The haters and the losers and the wannabes, is that... I get so close to the microphone. Mm-hmm. It's my
you
only
usually
thing.
Need to, though. You're, that's really good. Like, if you go back and listen to early TBTL live events, that early for me, I should say, the ones that I was on when I didn't have very much experience, I thought I was eating the mic. And you're really present. You're right here. And then I would pipe up and tell a weak joke like this, and it would sound like that. So at live events, I tried to emulate
you. You got to eat that microphone.
And get as close as possible. But then I throw a twist in it because these are the one microphones you don't want to do that to.
It's funny, though, that's honestly the only thing I have going for me.
Yeah.
It's like over, again, 15 years of doing it. And I mean, I've worked in radio for 20 years, but I wasn't the – in fact, it's more like 10 years, honestly, because – up until I was about 30, I was kind of way more behind the scenes than in front of the scenes. And then even after that, I wasn't like in public, like at public events talking into microphones. That was its...
Brian Park, though, right? That was, you were hired...
I was probably 29.
Yeah.
But that was not... And now I'm just taking this to public address town. So I got that job and I was hosting a radio show, which I'd never really tried to do before, but it was still a very controlled environment. We had scripts... that were written. We had
former MTV VJs.
That's right. Who did not?
That's
despite
not true.
The
she
rumor,
wasn't a VJ,
she was. Wasn't a VJ. She was the right. news person there, right. Allison Stewart, who I think just got a new show on WNYC.
No
and
kidding.
She,
cool.
She took over for somebody there. Well, that's a bad way to put it. There was some vacancies that opened up as a result of the sudden
retirement.
The
of some
long
folks.
Overdue. Attention paid to how men comported themselves in the workplace, and so they were looking to hire a new host, and they hired Allison Stewart, and she's
good.
Great. She's really, really good. But she is not the person who asked Bill Clinton boxers or briefs. She was hosting an MTV Rock the Vote event where a person, someone there who was there
mm-hmm.
to rock said vote.
Mm-hmm.
See, I knew that I'd get to something germane mm-hmm. to today's topic.
There's a right way to rock the vote, and there's a wrong way to roll the vote. It's my understanding.
And a wrong way to host this show, yeah. And I'm knee-deep in it right now. Anyway, she was like hosting this Rock the Vote event where a kid, someone famously asked Bill Clinton if he wore boxers or briefs. And then over time, it became this thing, like I was telling people for the longest time when they were like, oh, who's the other host of this show? Brian Park Project. I was like, oh, it's a, you might, she was on MTV. Her name is Allison Stewart. And oh, she asked Bill Clinton boxers or briefs. Oh. And everyone was like, oh, yeah, I remember her. It was total Mandela effect.
Oh, kind
never
of,
happened.
Kind of Tina Fey playing Sarah Palin saying, I can see Russia from my house. And now we all think that she said, I can see Russia from my
house. She didn't say that?
Yeah, we've talked about this on the show before. That was Tina Fey.
We've talked
said
about
that.
This on the show before?
I swear.
Andrew, I've been through a lot recently, okay? So just please don't cyberbully. Don't cyberbully me. What step is remembering things?
Listen, if you and I remembered shit, we would have done 5 years of this and called it a good. Like, we, by the fact that we can reuse content like this is important.
I felt a kinship with, speaking of Howard Stern, who I started the program.
You want to do a make-believe radio show in a room somewhere. I'm telling you, there's no money in that.
I was listening to the Stern show today, and he got a call from a woman. I'm not going to say that this is probably Howard Stern's greatest moment, so just, I'm always advocating for the show and saying it's not what people think it is as far as just kind of puerile humor. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to cite an example of something that's fairly puerile. And certainly not gendered the way that we should. It's not the way that we really should talk to people anymore. But he got a call from a woman who had a particularly deep voice.
This is a long time ago, or this?
No,
is
this
recently?
Is today.
Oh, okay.
And he got a call from this woman who had a deep voice, and he was fascinated with how deep her voice is. And I remember this same woman called in like 8 months ago,
oh, okay.
And they had like a 20-minute conversation about her how deep her voice was. And he had no memory of it. Mm-hmm. And he asked her, and he said, you know, like, wow, your voice is really deep. She goes, yeah, I called 6 months ago, and we talked about this exact thing. And then he proceeded to have the entire same conversation with her. And again, I wouldn't stand by the content of the conversation necessarily, but on some level, I was like, oh, good, it's not just me
right.
who has literally no memory of what happens from show to show.
Speaking of things we regret, two corrections I would like to offer up, or okay. mea culpas is a better way of putting it. Number one, did I just say I can see Alaska from my house? Because I think I meant to say
you said
I can
Russia.
See did I say
you
Russia?
Said Russia.
You're sure? Okay.
You said
then
Russia.
I'm keeping that mea culpa and using it later. I'm applying it to this next thing. You and I were gently ribbing, beep, beep, ribby, ribbing, public radio yesterday because you especially were very anxious just to suck up.
I'm glad you're bringing this up because okay. I've had some thoughts on it as well, and please continue.
And I said something. Well, you were very much on edge, and you were saying, like, even though I know there are no results in the morning West Coast time for them to be giving me, I just want to feel very much like connected to the buildup to the election, and public radio wasn't giving that to you yesterday. And then I said, yeah, and you should have heard on the local level. I turned on the station and heard, like, the local show, and they were just being totally, you know, just talking about things that had nothing to do with the election. That wasn't local programming. I forgot. I never even heard what show it was. But here locally, the shows that come on at 9 a.m. are not local
shows. Oh, absolutely
shows.
Not.
So I was misattributing my complaint. It wasn't even really a complaint. It was an observation. But I felt terrible about it because I got in the car later and I actually heard the local show at noon and it was really good. And then I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I felt terrible.
Yeah, I kind of regretted that overall. One, because our friend Phyllis Fletcher works for the network.
Yeah.
And
did she hit you up?
Not in a way that was defensive. She said, yeah, I agree. I hope it's okay if I share this. She's to paraphrase, she just said, oh, yeah, I kind of thought we should have probably on a national level been covering politics kind of wall to wall. But also because, like, you know, I don't know. I was being sort of petty. And I don't know. It's just like, well, I don't know why I needed to say that. I guess it's because it's such a departure for me because I find in public radio in general and specifically the national program created by NPR, I find it to be so informative and such a vital part of my life.
Yeah.
That it's like, again, one day every couple of years where it's like not delivering for me what I want.
Yeah.
And so I'm not unlike occasionally people with this show because, you know, people feel really close to us because of the kind of show that we're doing. Then when we don't deliver on that, or when we say something about a band they like or an experience that they really value and we kind of are – or I am like, you know, dismissive about it, it hits people real hard. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't say that I felt personally let down by Audie Cornish, but actually that's not true. I thought that the night content was I drove down from Bellingham down here to Seattle, and I listened to the special programming that they were doing. And having just apologized for being too hard on my brethren at public radio.
He's rolling up his sleeves and making a fist right now. So get ready for this.
At NPR, I will say that a structural problem with public radio trying to do live stuff is that they never do live stuff. So when it's time to do it, it is calling, even at the highest levels of the network, it is asking a bunch of people to do something that is like that they never do.
Yeah, they do it once every 2 years.
And it sounds like it. Everyone's just like, I made this joke years ago. It's like they're on a tightrope walking over a shark tank. And it's their first time doing it. And then the other problem is it's public radio and this is the mission, but they're so committed to balance that it's just a series of people, some of whom's opinions are not as valid. So it'll be like, we're going to have this Democratic strategist on, and then they'll have that person on, and then we're going to have this Republican strategist on. And guess what? The Republican strategist is just...
He's wearing a Pepe the Frog mask.
It's just not there. And they're on the phone.
Right.
Both of them are on the phone. And the Republican strategist is not there to play ball with NPR. They're not there to really answer the questions. They're there to just kind of do their thing. And because it's public radio, no one knows. There's some weird break. I'm sorry. We went from esoteric microphone talk to esoteric public radio national programming talk. So buckle up. This is for basically our five listeners that work in public radio. But... the problem is when they do this national programming, because they're NPR, they have a million weird breaks built into it for like so that like, you know, the station in Wyoming that's on their own time zone or something can like jump out and do the farm report.
Mm-hmm. Or here, you know, locally, I was listening a little bit last night, too. So I have a retort to all this. But also it is helpful because that's how, you know, KUOW, our local station, can break in and give me the local reports on the ballot initiatives and all of that. So
the problem was. Well, I would say the challenge maybe is a better way to put it. The challenge was they had a million of these weird random breaks they had to keep taking, which they don't actually take a break. They just reset. They say, this is, you know, you're listening to special coverage of the blah, blah, blah. And so they do that. And then, but it's like some guy's like just yammering on a crummy phone line from somewhere. Oh, this was the other thing. The first guest they had on. So this is like the top of the show. So it's like, 5 o'clock maybe in Seattle, so 8 o'clock on the East Coast. Nobody leans into the horns for their election coverage theme music like
They like to let them breathe.
They're like, there's like a guy who has a flugelhorn that's trapped in the basement of NPR, and then every 2 years they're like, Terry, come on up, it's your moment to shine. Anyway,
God, I wish we had that.
So it's like. It's like minute one of the coverage, Flugelhorn has flugged. Mm-hmm. They're into it, and then they go, we think we have on the – so they read their prepared statement, and then they're like, we think we have on the line. Do we have him? Steve Israel, a former head of the Democratic National Committee. Do we have Mr. Israel, Congressman? And he's like, yeah, I'm here. How are you? Oh, a lot better now that we know we have you. Yeah. I'm like, y'all, it's the first guest. Line the shit up. Like, this is not hard. We are not in our... I'm sorry. Remember how I was being diplomatic a minute ago? Right. Well, that guy's gone. It's like... It's the first thing you're doing. Work it out. Why? We're not in hour seven of breaking news coverage where you are, like, just pulling from these... Like, you're getting someone at the headquarters. It's like, you can definitely have the first guest figured out. It should not feel that tenuous.
I will say, I do think they warmed up later in the night because you were texting me a little bit on this topic. I assume I'm not the only
person.
I'm
just a catty little bitch and I love the drama.
How many people were you texting about the NPR
coverage? Just you. But I was thinking of other people while I was texting you.
That's the worst.
That's the best up part. My power cord scuttled my... That's good. That's all that deserved was a muted ding.
I will say that I was listening much later in the night because like we were watching on TV and then I went to take a shower. So I was listening in there. I was puttering around in the kitchen. I think it smoothed out later in the night. What I heard wasn't quite as egregious, but I know what you're talking about. And you're listening to people that, you know, in my case, these are people that I listen to a lot and really respect, and they're great at their job, but they just don't have the live experience. And for the most part, what I heard was good. Even the I heard one GOP strategist guy. I think he was actually – he was a member of the Trump transition team and had worked on a – was a political consultant for somebody else. And I was really expecting some, you know, real partisan – kind of him just coming out and saying whatever he wanted to say, not answering questions. He actually, I thought, was okay. Given his background, I thought that he was actually very much playing ball. And yeah, I thought Audie did a good job. There was just one point where they lost a senator on the line. The senator's talking on the phone. They ask a question. They wait for it. And then I think Audie goes, "Senator?" And he's clearly gone at this point. You would move on. Anybody else who is more familiar with live radio would move on. But then one other person in the room, and I don't know her name, she's just like, "Senator!" And just kind of like after the – I mean, it was so clear he was gone.
Well, that was the other thing.
But it sounded like the ship was sailing away and just one person screamed, "Well, Senator!"
I want to point out that even though I picked the name Audie Cornish,
it was not Audie. Who's host?
No, no, no. What I'm saying was the hour – they kept – they were trading off hosts. And the hour that I was listening to actually was not Audie. So I want to be clear that I'm not trying to throw her under the bus. I would also say Mara Liasson, peace and love. But like she – I don't know if she ate a mayonnaise sandwich like as the – as the flugelhorn was playing, but like she had like she couldn't get like there, and our Mara Liasson is here. Hello, okay, Mara, what do you think about this thing? Well, and I was just like, I don't know, hot tea. I'm not one to talk, but if I was trying to be part of the national programming of this thing, I just feel like I would have hoped that it would have been a little smoother. But whatever, I don't know why. Right. I don't understand why this is a nit I need to pick again. My excuse, I get to use this excuse for like the next 2 weeks. I'm going through a lot.
Right.
I'm going to lean.
Get out
I'm
all, gonna, just flush
I'm,
it all out
I'm
going to
really, really, really use that excuse while I can.
The last thing I'll say on this is what I said to you via text message before I even sampled last night's offerings from the network. I do think it's a lot better than it used to be. I remember being new in radio, not even having the live experience myself. And like, I loved Linda Wertheimer. I just, you know, you, not unlike SNL, I think you like always think the best era of ATC is the era when you discovered it as a young man.
I agree. I think Ray Suarez is the great, although Ray Suarez is legitimately the best Talk of the Nation host that ever existed.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But that was also the guy who was the host when I heard about
too.
The show.
Absolutely. He did those long-ass essays that any program director would probably beat out of a host these days. So I loved it. I think – I remember listening to Linda Wertheimer, who I loved. Who was it? When I started listening, it was Robert Siegel, Linda Wertheimer, Noah Adams, right? So to me, that was the dream team. And but she was so terrible live to the degree that it made it really entertaining because you just didn't know what was going to happen next. Like if they dropped the ball, like the entire house of cards just came tumbling down. Well, that's a mixed metaphor.
I want to just say that for all of the people who have a still small voice inside them, or maybe a loud
cling
giant voice inside them saying, "You dinguses, you can't even find a GD audio drop on the fly with zero pressure on this show."
That's a good point.
Your point is well taken.
That's a good point.
Your point is absolutely well taken. I've had more disasters doing this show, which has the lowest degree of difficulty you could ever have. So I know that I'm being, again, a catty little bitch who loves the drama. But I also know that I couldn't do a better job myself. As they say, those who can, do. Those who can't, start a podcast.
Start a podcast. And keep it going for 10 years.
Hey-o.
Against everybody's...
against everyone's advice. Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, I'll tell you about my Twitter joke that's... It's really if I sound off or more off than normal here at the top of the show, or again if I just seem a little bit curmudgeonly, it's because I've got a lot on my mind over this Twitter joke. So we'll do that.
Oh, is that what you mean when you say you're going through a hard time?
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, the sobriety is a piece
talking
of cake.
About the drinking thing.
Oh God,
shit.
No, that's oh, I mean no, that's easy. That's wait. Am I sober? I keep forgetting. I told you I never remember from show to show what we've talked about.
Did I talk about that?
Anyway, a quick break, and then we'll be back with more TBTL.
By the way, oh, excuse me, I'm Mara Liasson. Welcome back to the show.
I was going to make a comment about that. Right. Just clear.
I literally had, in real time, 7 minutes to do that. Like, and I just...
And we started with like a lot of music. We really leaned into our own.
I mean, I was adding... That was part of the 7 minutes for the record.
Right.
5 minutes of us talking about what song we should play, right. And then 2 minutes of the song happening. And in all of that, I mean, again, I no one to blame but myself for anything bad that goes wrong the rest of the show after I was being such a jerk to everyone. I was going to say this movie...
Bohemian Rhapsody?
It's not getting... It's kind of, in the words of Dennis Green, it is what we thought it was, I think. Mm.
It's doing well at the box office.
Oh, really?
Though, despite that, opening weekend, apparently. Yeah, I really dislike biopics anyway. Like, it has to really be a good one to get over the top for me. And I saw the trailers for it, and it's the, you know, I can't think of his name, the kid from Mr. Yeah. Robot, who, has a lot of talent, but...
Yeah.
It's not for me.
Yeah, I want to say it's like
Remy
Malko or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, God.
There's no way for us to know.
Everybody calm down. There is absolutely no way for us to know. I guess I'm glad the movie's doing well because I would like more... More people from the Willennium generation, which our friend Lynn clarified is a that's a Will Smith record. It's not so. Will I Am has never had. He's never done anything playing on the Millennium.
As you said that, by the way, part of my
sounded
brain
wrong.
Was, I thought it was Will Smith, but I didn't know enough to you know.
I'm glad. Well, thank you, Lynn, for the clarification. Sorry, everybody, for all the Will Smith heads out there. Sorry, I got it wrong.
But you were close, Rami Malek, or I don't know how to say it, but it's Rami Malek.
I'm glad for the younger generations who may not be as familiar with Queen's music to familiarize themselves with it. And if the movie does that, that's cool because I'm such a fan of the band.
Mm-hmm.
I'm spacing now on the biopic that I was so crazy about that I saw.
What about Blaze Foley?
The Blaze Foley one.
Yeah.
That's I think the last time we talked about this Queen movie was in that context. I would love to see somebody make a Queen movie that doesn't follow the traditional biopic arc.
Sure.
Now that I know it's possible, and if you missed that episode or if you're a new listener to the show, the Blaze Foley biopic, which I think is just called Blaze.
Mm-hmm.
I highly, highly, highly recommend that.
You know what I really liked as a biopic is Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
You know,
did you ever end up seeing that?
I did not see it. I did not care for the ending. No,
it's
I
about
didn't.
Chuck Barris, for those who don't know, it was based on his own "quote unquote" autobiography
because he hosted the Gong Show and he claimed to be a CIA agent, right?
Right, and it's unclear if he was really losing his mind or if he was just kind of doing this book. The story that he wrote in his book was kind of more like a trolling thing or if it's somewhere in between. But then the movie, which was, I think, directed by George Clooney, ended up just like taking his book and these claims he made at its word and just made this biopic movie, you know, about a crazy game show host who also is a spy for the U.S. government and sneaking across the Berlin Wall and stuff like that.
He was on Livewire, not when I was Chuck Barris was
no
on
kidding.
Live- yes. Way before my time.
Pre-Burbank.
Way pre-Burbank. And he was, I guess, the weirdest guest they ever had.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And during my time, we've had some weird guests, and he was apparently weirder than them all.
I didn't realize that he just passed away last year.
Yeah. The weirdest guest we had on during my time was probably Van Dyke Parks.
Oh, yeah.
Poet.
Right. You mentioned
oh,
that.
Oh, my God.
Beach
heaven.
Boy writer. Of
I
lyrics,
mean, like,
lyricist
in the way that, like, this is an unfair comparison, but you know what? This is the day for it. I'm on the step where you're a real a-hole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just burn down everything so that you can.
He is like I feel like he's
later.
A beach. Yes, he wrote. I mean, he wrote his poetry, and he his poetry was something I guess Brian Wilson was a fan of, and he collaborated with Brian Wilson for like a lot of stuff that's on that Smile record, or maybe the entirety of that Smile record. I would personally say that the lyrics of the Smile record are the least compelling part.
Mm.
And I was going to say he's. I mean, you know, another person that one of the Wilsons picked up and liked their music was Charles Manson. So if you just want a kind of a
right.
sense for like how great their judgment was in the day,
right.
I don't know. It didn't like Van Dyke Parks showed up wearing overalls and high as a
flipping kite.
Yeah.
And things went downhill
from there.
And
that's just residual, probably. I mean.
No, it was one of our, I don't know if I said this at the time, I probably did when I talked about it on the show, but after the show, one of the producers, like one of the co-founders of the show and a sweet guy who I really like, said, yeah, that was whose idea it was to have Van Dyke Parks on the show. Said, yeah, that was really weird. I guess I shouldn't have let him, I shouldn't have gotten him so high on the driver from the airport. And I was like, no shit, Sherlock. Thanks, dude. And by the way, this is when we did the show at Revolution Hall. There's like 1,000 people there.
So you have somebody who's working on the show, at least then. You don't say
this
no
is
more.
One of the
I don't.
Co-founders of the show. I mean, this
and
guy
he,
is
they're
like.
They're getting
a,
people high on the way to the venue
I
from the airport?
I think, in fairness to this person, who I love and who is an occasional listener to this show. I don't know if he got Van Dyke Parks high or just allowed him to get high. And those are very different things.
Sure, yeah.
I don't think he like...
He didn't smoke him up, as
I don't
the kids
think,
say.
I don't think he...
Because that would be amazing.
In fair... you know what? I'll ask him because I'm going to visit with this guy. I love this dude, by the way. I'm going to visit with him and I'll ask him what he meant by that. I'm going to assume it was more just like he didn't know how to put the brakes on Van
right,
Dyke Parks.
Sure. Which I understand
high.
That. Like if somebody
yeah,
is...
Yeah, that's a weird... What are you like, supposed to say?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on the situation. But yeah, you want to be... You want to give somebody the space to be themselves. I mean, you know,
sure,
it's legal.
Course.
You're, you know,
yeah,
like,
right.
whatever.
But I was... I ended up, unfortunately, being the person who had to then deal with the very high, weird Van Dyke Parks.
And we can't say names, but I know from talking to you off air that you've dealt with some other people, comedians whom I love. I'm thinking of one in particular.
Oh,
no
I don't
names.
Care. I'll say. I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, well, Horatio Sanz.
Right.
Crazily high. And he was getting the fear on stage. I could see it happening. He was sweating.
He was getting on top
it
of
was
him.
Super getting on top of him. Dan Savage has, by his own admission, been way too high a couple times.
Oh, on LiveWire?
Yeah,
no,
because
I didn't know that.
I guess he gets nervous, and so he would like take an edible, but then he didn't time it right. And I feel comfortable saying that because he copped to it on stage as well.
Now, I could be wrong here. We can edit this out, but I mean, Ron Funches, obviously, he's somebody who celebrates getting high all the time. Was he swore too much, though, right?
First time we had him on, he was great.
I love that man, by the way.
I mean, I do, too. I just don't want to interview him on a radio show anymore. I mean, I like his comedy. First time he came on, he was great. Second time we had him on, he was just not – he was just talking nonsense. And I don't even know if that's because he was high. I kind of think he was. But he was literally using a different voice. And his answers were, again, like they were in the realm of nonsensical.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, again, I don't begrudge him that. It was nice of him to be on the show. He's way more famous than our show is. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. But it's just like, you know, one of the most obstinate guests I've ever had is Chuck Palahniuk, the guy who wrote Fight Club and stuff. I know I've told that story before. He, again, took some kind of a benzo because he was nervous. And then he drank some red wine. And when he got on stage, he was just... It manifested for him as being weirdly withdrawn, like he just wouldn't answer my questions straight ever, and he wouldn't just give me like a real answer to anything. And that was the only time I think I've ever gotten openly annoyed with a guest on stage. And I just said to him, because I kept asking him questions, he kept not answering, and I said something to the effect of, well, Chuck, what would you like to talk about?
Uh-huh.
And then it just weirdly just like the power dynamic just shifted.
Well, didn't he actually take that as an opportunity to talk about what he wanted to talk about? Did he take that in the tone that you kind of meant it? Like kind of
I
a
think
sarcastic
if I remember right, it just flipped the power dynamic and then he started playing along, i.e.
answering questions
in a more like normal way. And then afterwards he sent a very chagrined, sweet email.
Oh, he did.
Of saying, yeah, that's how I know what happened.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, I'm really sorry. I was really nervous. I took a pill.
Oh, interesting.
In Ibiza. And then, yeah, so.
By the way, sarcastic Barb, that would be a great Halloween costume next year.
Oh, my God, that's great.
Just
you're
be
so
Barb
right.
from Stranger Things, only be super sarcastic.
Oh, what a great diving board.
I guess I'll just sit here all night.
All right, let's thank some donors of the day. I'm going to throw a little Clay Pigeons your way. This is a Blaze Foley song. This is the John Prine version, though, which I like the idea of Blaze Foley very much. And I've gotten into this music live, this live record that he recorded. But John Prine is the bee's knees for me. So John Prine doing an awesome Blaze Foley song is that's the peak for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm peaking right now, everyone.
I'm going down to the Greyhound station, going to buy a ticket to ride.
But probably the only thing I like more than John Prine doing a
a Blaze Foley song is the fact that we have donors of the day. And these wonderful, generous people are making the show possible. Talking about Kendra Bryant of Oakland, California.
Go Raiders.
Go Raiders, who have the best play-by-play guy. I'm still trying to get this thing greenlit. Trying to do a story about Brent Musburger. So Brent Musburger was for many, many years just a national TV, sports TV guy. Did football. He did all the different sports. He did all the different ways. And then at some point, he just decided that he wanted to move to Vegas and just host a 3-hour gambling show from a casino.
Oh.
Which he's currently doing.
Like a play-by-play? Or he's doing one of those poker tournaments?
It's basically like a sports show where the focus is on gambling. So in other words, what's the spread?
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And then talking about sports, but through the lens of what does this mean for gamblers?
Sure, yeah. That's actually a great idea.
It's a great idea. And it's this company, if I remember the story right, this company that hired him, they didn't have a lot of money, but I think they offered him just a massive share of this company, this sports gambling media network. And so he's just living out there doing this, and it's actually kind of popular, I think. Then the Oakland Raiders, because they're coming to Vegas next year, were like, yo, do you want to be our radio play-by-play guy? And he was like, okay, cool. So I've been listening to him sometimes if I'm listening to a Raiders game on the local broadcast.
Oh, that's right, because you have
he's
satellite.
He's incredible because he is not constrained by any of the things that a normal... So like there was a time when the Raiders were playing, I forget the team, but in their stadium... The A's were still playing. So there are sections of the field that are dirt.
Yeah.
And the other team was missing field goals. And he was like, yeah, you love seeing them have to kick off of that bare skin. Like, he was just...
Everybody else in the league talks about what a trash stadium that is, right, and that you have to
play
that way.
Digging and he's the fact loving that it. They're kicking off of dirt, like probably it's covered in seagull poop.
Oh, that's great.
I know. It's just like so unlike what you would hear a normal broadcaster doing. Yeah. I just love it. I think the name of his show is called Your Guy in the Desert.
Is that a gambling phrase?
I think it's a Vegas
thing. Oh, it's just
thing.
He's your guy in the desert.
But who? I mean, there are some gambling or some mafioso implications. He's just an interesting guy. He's not yet a donor of the day, so let me quickly thank the rest of the donors. And then if you have any Brent Musburger related questions, I'd be happy to field them. Ashley Gilliam of Richardson, Texas. Trying to think, how did Richardson, Texas do last night? What did they check in on the Kornacki map? Denny Gemmer of Seattle, Washington. Every year, Denny donates, and we thank Denny. And every year, I try to remember how to say Denny's last name.
G-M-U-R. I don't know either. Gemmer.
Thanks, Denny. Margaret Kay of Seattle, Washington. Thank you, Margaret. And then Christy Landenfeld of beautiful Ann Arbor, Michigan. I say that, but I don't think I've ever been to Ann Arbor.
I don't think I have either. I think I applied for jobs there. I only hear great things about Ann Arbor, except for people who are Ohio State football fans.
Oh, yeah,
my
there's
family
that.
Is a bunch
but,
of Ohio State football
but as far
people.
As a town goes, I've heard that it is just
great.
Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
I think I've only been – I have not spent very much time in Michigan. I've been in Detroit a couple times, and then I've been to
– Interlochen.
I have not been to Interlochen. You almost took a job there, right?
I did, yeah.
I did a I hosted an event once in Midland, Michigan, which is the home of the Dow Chemical Corporation.
Well, I was going to say Midland and God love any listeners who are from there. It's not like just the name Midland, Michigan doesn't fill you with hope that it's going to be beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Is it really beautiful?
And they have an amazing baseball stadium because the place is swimming in Dow Chemical money.
Wow.
I mean, it's
and they're swimming in Dow Chemicals. That's
the
other problem.
Part of why the guy by the last name of Dow, why he moved there was because there was the water, I don't know if it was the ponds.
It's not the water.
In this case, it was for once. His first name for the company was Blazin' Dow Chemical Company. There was some kind of a chemical that was occurring in this part of Michigan in the ground or in the water. Like, I don't think it's dangerous, but basically it was advantageous for him as a young chemist. He had ready access, easy access to this chemical that he was trying to develop. And there happened to be a lot of it around this part of Michigan. So he moves up there and starts... in the way a miner would be mining for whatever they were trying to get, he starts creating whatever he creates with Dow Chemical, and the whole thing grows to this amazing thing. But so the city of Midland, Michigan is gorgeous because it's just sitting on this gusher of money that is Dow Chemical. And then there's everything else around it is, let's just say, a little bit less gorgeous.
Yeah, the surrounding communities and...
Yeah, I mean, I didn't do a whole tour, and if we have listeners that live in the periphery of Midland, Michigan, I don't mean to besmirch your town, but yeah, Midland was a cool place. Christy, Margaret, Denny, Ashley, and Kendra, thank you. We really appreciate it, and we wouldn't be doing the show without you. Episode 2766 in the Collector Series, that is all thanks to you. So thank you so much.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Our top story today, of course, the election was last night. The Democrats were able to win back the House of Representatives. The Republicans picked up some Senate seats. It was seen as, and I'm not going to try to talk politics on it, all I am getting a text from our friend Chris Hayes. Last night I asked him if I should be terrified about the lame duck Congress.
Mm-hmm.
I know I said I wasn't going to talk politics, but I wondered why more people weren't. I mean, I wondered why even going into this, there wasn't more discussion about the fact that, okay, so the Democrats have now control of the House starting in January. But between now and January, you have a Republican-controlled Congress and a president who's probably pissed. And it's like, are they going to burn the whole thing down on their way out? I mean, that's really scary to me.
I don't know. It's where I just saw right before the show. As a matter of fact, the music was running and you saw my face. You're like, what did you see on your phone? I just saw that Jeff Sessions is finally out.
Well, right. So I text Chris last night, which is, I feel terrible because he's at the Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah.
He's like doing these live reports all night. And then I'm just asking him like legit.
How should I feel?
Yes. That's legitimately what I did. I said, hey, good job tonight. I know you're busy, no pressure, but should I be terrified of a lame duck Congress and Trump? And then he said, I don't know. And then he said, everything is uncharted. And then he just like a minute ago said, I think he's okay with me reading this. He said, yes, you should be terrified. I think we may go into extremely dangerous territory very quickly.
Oh, wow.
So that's a message of hope.
Okay, great.
Here on a Wednesday.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just wondering why that wasn't more. I think the prevailing wisdom was like, yeah, the Democrats are probably going to get control of at least the House. But then you're going to have this weird situation where anything kooky that Trump wants to do, this is the time when he's going to do it, right?
Yeah.
Like, and also, I'm starting to think, look, there's a lot of things we need to fix about our electoral system, but maybe it shouldn't be, like, for instance, when we got fired by Cairo.
I was going to say the same exact thing. Yes, good analogy.
When the first iteration of TBTL got fired by Cairo Radio, they, for some reason, probably just because they didn't have any backup hosts, they let us finish out the week. And it ended up being fine, but that was a dicey,
very rare thing. When you fire a radio host, even in public radio, I learned this. We were just talking about Ray Suarez. Who followed up Ray Suarez? The guy who ended up going to Fox News.
Juan Williams.
Juan Williams. I remember learning this lesson when Juan Williams just disappeared one day. And I was like, that's strange. And then the news broke that he had been fired. And, you know, my boss is like, yeah, when you fire somebody from radio, you don't just put them in front of a microphone for one more day.
Right. And similarly, it's like when people are holding the levers of power for the entire country, and you've said to them, no mas, maybe that should be your last day.
Right.
Because, I mean, really, it's a weird system. Like, we expect people to just be on their best behavior. And granted, it has usually worked that way. Because people are worried about what we would call a legacy. Or, like, common human decency.
Right.
And that's sort of where we are finding ourselves in uncharted territory. Let's talk about the important issues from last night, though. Including the fact that I learned that sparkling cider is way too sweet.
Mm. I used to have this thing, me and my friend Tony, like when we were kids, but we wanted to feel like we were drinking, we would drink this, it was like sparkling, I guess it was just like sparkling grape juice,
right,
which I think is probably too sweet now, but I loved it as a kid.
Me too. It was my favorite. And now that I don't drink anymore, we actually just had it in the refrigerator anyway, but we had a bottle of Martinelli's sparkling cider.
No, that's cider, so that's apple based.
Okay. And like I remember just thinking it was as a kid, sometimes we'd go to like family dinners with my dad's side of the family, and they were the fancy people. They were they were middle class, which to us was just like,
right.
What life do you even live here?
Their apple juice makes you burp.
Yeah.
How fancy.
I remember seeing that Martinelli's out and just being like, oh, it's going to be a good night. And so I brought the Martinelli's down, and Carrie and I, we got a hotel room because I'm flying to Chicago today, and I got ice, like filled up the ice bucket and got the Martinelli's in there. And I was just, and then the moment that MSNBC declared that they were officially calling the House for Democrats, I was like, and what, you know what they should do? If you're going to have sparkling cider, have a cork in there.
Yeah. Oh, is it just a twist? Just,
no,
yeah.
it has like a, you need a bottle opener to get the top off.
Oh, really? It's like a bottle cap.
Hmm. Yeah. But if we're going with something that seems vaguely champagne-y.
Yeah.
I had it in my mind there was going to be a champagne cork pop. There wasn't, but whatever. Mm-hmm. We opened it, poured it in the champagne flutes, toasted. I was like, yes, I've been waiting, as I went into great detail on Tuesday's show. I've been waiting 2 years for this. And then I took one sip of it, and I was like, that's too sweet.
No, give me a tab.
I know it killed me today. When I was checking out of the hotel room, there was like an entirely full bottle of Martinelli sparkling cider. I wonder if something – and Carrie said the same thing. She was like, when I was a kid, I loved this, but this is – I mean, I felt like I was going into some kind of sugar coma from like one half of one flute of it.
That makes me want to go back, though, and try the sparkling wine that I used to drink as a kid. I can't remember the brand of it, but you still see it in stores. I'll bet you, in my recollection, it was both very sweet, but also kind of, it would really get the kind of the back of your tongue, too.
Almost like MSG, but not?
Maybe. More like tart, I think, is the word I'm looking for, kind of, like a sweet tart.
Another observation I had from last night: nobody knows how to say Beto O'Rourke's name, including me.
I thought that's exactly how you say. Oh no, I say Beto. No, Beto. Beta.
See,
Beta. Now you're in my head. I thought it was Beto O'Rourke.
No, I thought it was Beto O'Rourke. Last night, people were calling him Beto O'Rourke, and some people were calling him Beto O'Rourke. I know there's a way to say it, but what I'm saying is there is no uniformity on it, and I think this is part of why he lost,
dude. This wasn't even a question before you just opened your mouth a second ago, and now I'm in my head about it. If you had just said to me, hey, who is the Democrat?
What would you have said?
I think I would have said Beto, but now that I'm saying it, it sounds weird. I think I would have said Beto O'Rourke.
But that's not how they were saying it last night. The plurality of it was Beto,
okay.
But there was Betos,
that makes sense.
There was Betos.
I never heard Beto until you just said it.
I think I thought it was Beto.
Mm.
But it was nuts to watch every TV channel, everyone talking about him. And part of it is because it's not a real name. And I don't mean that it's like his name is Francis. And then it was his family nickname for him. But it's not Berto. I was reading his Wikipedia page last night because I wanted to get to the bottom of this.
Sure.
Of this Beto situation. And I mean, obviously there's a way his family says it. There's a correct way. But it's not sort of like a – it's not a traditional name, and it's not a – what I read on Wikipedia was that it's kind of like there's a kind of a Spanish language nickname where if your name is Alberto, they would call you Berto.
Mm,
okay. But his family's version was Beto instead of Berto.
Is this a video of him? How to pronounce his
probably
name?
Let's hear what he says. I bet he says Beto. I bet he says Beto.
Beto O'Rourke.
Oh, here. This is just this is him saying his name from something.
Hey there, this is Beto O'Rourke.
Okay, so nobody got the memo.
And the O's blend together, almost like a Spanish pronunciation, Beto O'Rourke.
Right. He's an Irish guy.
Hey there, this is Beto O'Rourke.
He's an Irish American guy. His dad's very Irish. He's actually from, even though he's from El Paso, comes from a pretty well-heeled family. I believe his like maternal grandfather was like Secretary of the Navy or something.
Oh.
By the way, I love what the guy stands for, and I wish he would have won.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to take the piss out of him, but I just found it very interesting last night to realize that nobody knows how to say his name.
I have something. Let's get into this, because this is something we might disagree about. I'm sure you saw his speech, his speech. I think he knew he was going to drop an F-bomb, right? Like, he knew that he had certain things he was going to hit, and he knew that if he says it once, the networks will take it. He'll get some more headlines. He's, thinking about his political future. He's a rock star. He kind of leaned into that rock star image. I don't think that he accidentally said the F-word on probably the biggest stage he has had to this point.
Very interesting and very spicy take. I hadn't considered that. I will tell you this. And for those that didn't watch his speech, he said, "I fucking love you guys," or something like that.
Yeah,
like, yep. And it sounded very real to me. I know that Carrie and I both were just like, that was one of the more unexpected and fun moments in the night. It was, for all the things that have been shocking and unprecedented
of late with politicians and things that they'll now say, I mean, mostly coming from the current president, that was very shocking. And I was like, because it was like he was talking like a normal person. Like it's a thing that we would maybe say at a TBTL live
event.
Right,
yeah.
It never occurred to me that he planned it. I hope he didn't plan it.
I just don't think that you make that. I don't think that he would have said that 4 years ago. Same exact person, same exact scenario. Let's just say he was 4 years older or whatever. And I think that it was a very calculated, very smart thing. Because obviously he's still building a name for himself. We haven't heard the end of.
He's got to build that name more because we just nobody knows.
Yeah. And this is probably the beginning of a career for him in the public spotlight.
Well, he is a congressman.
Oh, that's right. He's a congressman. So, but I think that he will. I mean. Well, whatever. I don't want to get into speculation, but I think that he is, you know, potentially going to be more of a household name.
Sure.
And I think that you just don't accidentally say that. I think he knew that this would be the opportunity. I think there has been a bit of a coarsening of our culture, but if you can kind of twist that in the right way, saying, I fucking love you guys, as a way of kind of saying, like, well, what? You're going to ding me for saying the F word? Look what our commander in chief says all the time, only using it in a negative way.
Grab him by the F word.
Right. So, yeah, I think that it was a really smart decision. I just don't think that, well, like, we never had any other politician accidentally say it. I don't think it's a coincidence that in a 2018 he accidentally said it. Or. That he said it.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not. I had never occurred to me if it was if he did do that as a calculation. I can't make up my mind if I'm like tip of the cap because it completely worked on me.
Yeah.
Or if I'm like, ooh, that's disturbing because when you have that kind of, I guess you would say verisimilitude, you know, of this like thing that seems very real and in the moment, but it's been completely planned out.
Yeah.
That's like, that's almost like a sociopathic.
But we don't assume any other part of that speech was winged, right? Or maybe some parts of it, but obviously you have your acceptance speech, your victory speech laid out. You have your concession speech laid out. Like, you know what, you have speech writers who help you with these things.
I mean, I don't know enough about politics, I guess, to know how prepared the concessions, like, let me put it this way. I'd have a really hard time as a politician setting aside time to practice my concession speech.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I'm not a politician. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I think you like,
I would practice. Well, I mean, here's what I mean. I would practice my victory speech. You know, think about it. If you're one of these folks in a tight race, like Beto O'Rourke was, you're probably up until the polls close just going everywhere and anywhere you can, trying to just muster 10 more votes, 20 more votes. So where's the time in all of that you're like, but let me also practice my concession speech. Now, on the other hand, it is when there's going to be a ton of eyes on you. And
especially for him, like
where
I say,
he's like,
I
this think is that this is not the end of his career. This is the beginning.
I think this is the beginning of his career. Not, as you point out, it's unfair to say the beginning of his career, but certainly the beginning of his career, possibly in the kind of national spotlight the way it is. And so I think this was a huge moment for him. I mean, obviously, if you look at Hillary Clinton's concession speech, that was obviously very carefully written, but that was also the next day, so that doesn't really bolster my argument. But yeah, I think I could be wrong if somebody is in the know, but it would surprise the hell out of me if you don't have some sort of general notes. And of course, there is a lot of – he wasn't reading off of teleprompters. I'm sure there's a lot of winging it, but I'm sure there's also just like thinking I'm going to
hit general structure.
These beats. If nothing else, I feel like he went into this saying, if it feels right, I might do this.
Sure. Well, you know what? Let's ask Chris Hayes. He was there.
Yeah. That's
all he's
point.
Doing is getting ready to host his nighttime nationally broadcast show. So I'm sure he doesn't have anything better to do. Beto to do.
Oh, hey. I'll write it down. Okay, can I mention something about
Please.
Watching last night?
Yes.
You mentioned Steve Kornacki. I was playing Who Wore It Better because I was switching between MSNBC and then our local NBC product. And so the local product had, you know, mostly national coverage, but it wasn't tapping into the MSNBC crew at all. I feel like in the past, and of course Chris will hear this, so I could be wrong. I swear in the past there was a time in the night when NBC, the network programming, just took over the feed from MSNBC, and it was Brian Williams on both channels. But I could be wrong, but I swear that's what happened in 2016.
Well, maybe, although now the thing is because Brian Williams got busted down.
This would have been more recent than that. But anyway, this time they didn't do that. But what they did was they have, you know, that big computer that Kornacki just, it's like he is part of the computer.
It.
I love it so much. But then on NBC, they had Chuck Todd doing the same machine. So I was kind of going back and forth and watching.
Wow.
And Chuck Todd, who I also very much like, but I think I learned last night that I kind of like Chuck Todd behind the desk a little bit more. When they put people out there with their wireless mics and they can use their hands and they go around and they talk to people in the newsroom and you suddenly realize that Chuck Todd has a profile. Like and there's nothing wrong with it. Genevieve kept saying, why are you obsessed with Chuck Todd's profile of his face? He's not bad looking. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not making fun of his profile. I'm just not used to seeing the side of talking heads' faces. And I'm a Chuck Todd fan. I really like him. But he goes for more of a folksy kind of approach, trying to kind of make jokes and stuff. Kornacki is just like
– in it.
He is just tapped in. He is in the grid, man. There's one moment that when it was getting really late, I was watching until I think it was after midnight our time. I could be wrong about that, but it was getting late and it was getting really late East Coast time. And one of Kornacki's like colleagues mentioned, oh, that's right. It was the handoff. He was talking to a new host whenever the big handoff happened. And he mentioned, he's like, you were here this morning when I got here. Like, I almost heard concern in this guy's voice. I can't think of his name right now. And
Brian
like,
Williams got a good joke in at one point. He said, we're going to change Steve Kornacki's SIM card and we'll be back.
That's a pretty good joke.
I know. That was a decent spoof.
Yeah.
Peter Gross from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me in those Sonic commercials, if you've ever seen those two guys sitting in a car, and he's on the...
He's the taller guy, or he's
the taller guy?
Okay,
and he plays Mike Pence on that Comedy Central version of the Trump show called The President Show.
Yep.
Anyway, he wrote, he goes, it's still early, but I'm willing to call it Steve... And it's a photo of Steve Kornacki wearing three different wireless microphone batteries. He's like, Steve Kornacki is wearing three microphone batteries. I'm going to call this more information as it unfolds or whatever. It was like, I did that too last night. I started to, at some point, just compare and contrast the coverage.
Uh-huh.
And so I like went to ABC. ABC had a weird thing. They had like, conservatively speaking, 100 people up there. It was a giant semicircle of desks that included, but was not limited to, George Stephanopoulos. And that was it. No, George Stephanopoulos.
And friends.
Chris Christie. A couple of congressional reporters or White House reporters that I wasn't familiar with. How am I forgetting? Byron Pitts was up there. Cokey Roberts. It was just everybody you've ever seen. David Muir, who is the head of their... Did I say ABC? Is that what David Muir's on? Anyway, point being... The middle of – so they're in this giant semicircle and then there's this huge open floor in front of them that is – turns into a video screen. So if they're going to talk about like
–
but when there's no video on there, it's just white. And Carrie goes, when are they going to ice skate on this thing? Because it was so shiny. It looked like they were just surrounding an ice rink. That was okay.
They should have put a fire pit in there.
Right? That'd be so much better. A trash fire, actually, would have been perfect.
Yeah, literally a dumpster.
Then CNN had John King was doing the Kornacki, and he's competent. It's not bad, but he's a little more just kind of... there's something about Kornacki's enthusiasm that I just find so god darn... watchable.
But by the end, like I said, when the new host took over and he kind of mentioned how long he's been there, I was like, oh no, he's almost... like I got... personally really concerned for him because he seemed almost manic. And I know this is terrible for me to say, but like now I realize, oh my God, this guy's been...
That's
not
a Goldwater rule. We're not allowed to diagnose Steve Kornacki's mental fitness from afar.
Because he just seemed like, you know, he's always locked in, but at this time of the night, like it just seemed like he was just like nothing would stop this train. Nothing. Like he was just like talking. He was throwing out numbers and words and numbers and words, and this other guy is just standing there. Like,
did you
staring
see him
at
snorting him? Anything?
Yes.
Actually, they need to watch the angles of the camera angles because this guy Ari Melber was getting ready to do his update. So you know, I don't know why I need to deconstruct this. It is what it is, and it already happened. So whatever. But it was, you know, it was like the main hosting was Rachel Maddow, Brian Williams, and then kind of a cast of different folks, including our friend Chris down in El Paso. But then I think at some point this guy Ari Melber, who's another host on the network, who I think does a really good job, was going to start taking over some of the like maybe news updates or something, or they were going to check in with him. But so they were showing the main cast, and then you could just see when Kornacki would move the wrong way, Melber at his station getting ready to do his thing. Mm. But he was on his phone, and I also don't know if he was using his phone as a mirror to check how he was looking.
Oh, yeah.
But he was completely unaware he was on television.
Oh, yeah.
And he was
doing
this thing that we probably all do. I would certainly do it if I was about to go on national TV, mm-hmm. where you're in that moment of preening that you don't want anyone to ever see.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'll sometimes smile in the mirror before I leave, like, a hotel room to see what it's like if someone sees me smiling. Mm. I mean, it's normal. Everything's good.
Yeah, no. I bark into the mirror sometimes.
It's scritchy.
I just want to know what
you are. You scritching or skiffing?
I just want to. I want to know what it looks like when I'm out in public barking. So I go in the mirror, and usually before I leave the house, I just look directly in the mirror. That's a little taste. It goes on much longer.
We have to end the show now. For the love of God. Actually, we do have to end the show now. Do we have any emails? Should we try to throw in?
Well, I hesitate to even to get into this because I think I know exactly which tweet you're talking about and what's bugging you about it. But you just want to get that shit off
your
chest.
Oh, thank you for reminding me.
Let's just get through this together.
You know about the weird Flex Bro meme, right?
Yeah, you talked about it on the show, yeah.
So my rental car today is a Ford Flex. And I was looking at the car and I realized that that's what it was called. And I just took a picture of the front of the car and I wrote, weird rental car, but okay.
Right.
It was just a joke about weird flex, but okay. But what, so half of the people seem to get that joke. But what I didn't know is that there's a very vociferous pro Ford Flex community.
Oh, not kind of unlike the Scion that I, no yes. joke, I loved my Scion. I didn't realize
so
that.
So there's a bunch of yeah. people who think that I'm saying it's legitimately a weird rental car.
They think you're just making a comment on the car.
Yeah, they think
cool.
I'm saying, oh, weird rental car, okay.
Right.
But I'm saying weird flex, bro, but okay.
Because it's a picture of the flex.
And it's
right.
just a joke, but it's killing me to not go into the comments and be like, no, there's a meme called weird
right,
flex,
yeah,
bro. I haven't, but yeah. I'm telling you.
You don't. Nobody wins that
one.
Were
I still drinking? I don't think these things are literally related, but I will say that it's... It was like within moments, like one guy said, like, it's a really good car. Ford's done a terrible job marketing it. Like, people are there. And it's would you be surprised to know it's dudes? First of all, one guy who drives a Ford Flex. I was just like a 10 probably was like, I was just on my way to my Ford Flex. It's a really comfortable car.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, no, people don't get this. And then another guy was saying that it's a great car that Ford's done a terrible job marketing. And like so many people are just weighing in on the merits of the Ford Flex.
Yeah, I do. So I saw one other person was like, hey, that looks like a car for Walsh. Like I got sucked into your tweet thing. And that's probably how I saw it because I like boxy cars. I got to say, I do like the look of the Flex. I don't like the name Flex. I don't think like I.
Yeah, I
it's
wonder
boxy
why they chose
like a
that.
Scion, but like for some reason I don't feel like I'd be proud to be a Flex owner, and it's not about the car at all. I just kind of don't like that name.
I'm sure. I mean, the naming of cars is just. I mean, that is a science unto itself, right?
Yeah,
that's like there's. I'm sure there are very highly paid consulting
yeah.
teams or divisions of these companies that decide what you're going to call something, and I'm sure yeah. there's all kinds of consumer science and real science and pseudoscience that goes
yeah.
into the idea of like it rolls off the tongue and what does
yeah.
it draw call to mind when you say the
yes.
word, and is it
what does it translate to in other countries? No joke, that's
Citroen.
A big thing because what's that?
Well, there is a French car called the Citroen,
okay.
which means lemon.
Oh,
which over
right.
here
yes.
is not like the. I mean, there's like in the. This
yeah.
is an old car from the like 70s, but.
Mm-hmm. All right, I know you know about TBTL the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
You can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
So what do we want to call this? What are we going to call this show?
I wrote down one, and I think I saw you write down one. I wrote down the flugelhorn has flugled. I like that. What do you have?
I have you'd be a lot less pregnant if you smiled more.
I literally forgot about that. All right, you explain it.
We were talking before the show about a moment where Andrew had a moment where he was talking to someone and that person was in costume and the person was a woman and he didn't want to. I'm just speaking for you now.
I was telling you a story about this.
Comment on the costume because you weren't sure if it was a costume or not. And in, you know, one thing that we've learned in this day and age is people can wear and present in all kinds of different ways.
Yes, and this wasn't a Halloween-related story. This is something that happened to me a really long time ago. And I was just kind of mentioning that, like, you know, I thought this person was in a costume, but I was not going to bring it up because people can do whatever they want, and I wasn't sure if it was out of the ordinary for them.
Right. And so from that conversation, then we made a joke about kind of how awkward it is if you comment on someone's appearance and you're wrong about it.
Yes, because I believe I said to you, I'm like, I sat there and I refused to bring up this person's appearance the same way I would never mention somebody who's pregnant or apparently pregnant. I said I wouldn't touch that any more than I would say something about somebody who's apparently pregnant.
And then that made me think of like what are the worst things you can say to a woman, the the most idiotic things. And I kind of tried to make a portmanteau of them.
Right.
I said something like, you'd be less pregnant if you or I think I said
you'd be.
I said the baby will. I said that baby's going to be born sooner if you smiled more.
Right.
Which would be. I mean, I don't need to explain how awful that would be on every level.
Right.
And then you, I think, really hit it out of the park with, no, what you would say is you'd be a lot less pregnant if you smiled more.
Okay.
And we thought that was maybe the most compact, efficiently terrible thing to ever say to another person, particularly, I mean, obviously a woman.
Right.
And so we are not endorsing anyone saying that.
It was
a
joke about how awful.
The joke is on people. Men who say shit like that to women.
Exactly.
And so, and we joked that that could be the show title.
Because we were also trying to, we said at the beginning, we said, let's try to come up with a show title now so I can start working on the show page, and then we'll just work it into the show, like beep, beep, ribby, ribby.
Because that's a 30 Rock.
Right.
That was a thing that they did on 30 Rock. So anyway.
All right.
Good.
Didn't you write that? That's the only one you wrote? You didn't write down something during the show? I thought I saw you reach over or something. Okay. Let's go with the flugelhorn has flugled. You cool with that?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
After all of that.
I honestly thought we were going to go with you'd be a lot less pregnant if you smiled more.
I feel like that's why I wanted you to explain the context for it, because that really just sounds like an asshole thing to say without the context for it.
Good point. Good point. Okay.
So,
and then music. How about we go out with Andrew Bird, The Naming of Things?
Oh, yeah. I love that song.
Because we were talking about the Ford Flex. What I was going to say about the Ford Flex is I would imagine that they came up with that name. They wanted to call to mind this idea of something that kind of straddles different types of car. Like, it's hard to define. It's something in between an SUV and a sedan, and it's like, a flex means this car can be whatever you need it to be in this moment, maybe.
I don't know, weird name, but okay. Yeah. Huh. I don't know. It's a great car, Luke. I don't know why you won't let this go.
All right, thanks for listening,
everybody.
Ooh,
that does sound better closer to the mic. Maybe I should start miking that thing.
I'm very into analog sound effects these days.
Yeah.
Honestly, that really got me through. I sound like Don O'Neill. You know how he does that sometimes? Like when he's about to say a swear word, but he doesn't.
Yeah, take it down to Chinatown. Like,
really hit him right in the.
Okay.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll be back here tomorrow with more imaginary radio for you. Until then, go Mariners, go Seahawks, go eat a bagel. It's not the water. Go Browns. It's Beto Blues.
I was saying Beto. I know. I'm clear. My brain is clear now. I was saying Beto. If you had come in here and asked me this morning, that's what I would have said.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. See you tomorrow. Until then, please remember no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
I have to confess that I was impressed. was impressed that I dispelled all the mess and the broken glass. I was impressed. Here's where I disappeared, where I fell off a pier into. To be rescued at a week, I watch water boats escape as they draw figures, as they draw from the bottom of the lake, as they draw. I watch water boats escape as they draw from the bottom of the lake. I watch the water boats escape.
Power out.